Park Place Pastoral Center Meditation Meeting, Thursday afternoon, 9th May 1974. For the purpose of understanding meditation in our ordinary intellectual fashion, it could be helpful to see it in three aspects. The first is mindfulness. We considered that a little bit this morning. Mindfulness is a 24-hour business every day. It is a permanent, natural functioning of the mind. Permanent and natural. At first, it doesn't come to us easily at all. But in course of time, it just becomes natural, second nature to us, to be continuously mindful. Now that is the root aspect of meditation. Then there come two other aspects, both of which are intimately interrelated. One is related to the dictionary meaning of meditation. A musing. Musing. Thinking discursively upon a topic. That is the meaning which the whole world as such holds with regard to the word meditation. You meet a friend whom you see in a somewhat abstracted mood and you ask him, "What are you doing?" He might say, "Oh, I'm just meditating," which means he is talking silently in his mind, but he is talking purposively. He has an objective. There is something which needs this logical, discursive thinking process. He calls that meditating. When that is taken into the sphere of religion or any religious topic, then it begins to assume a deeper meaning, not a worldly meaning. One is trying to realize something which is unworldly, which one believes will transcend worldliness. And then we come from that, which is the discursive thought process, to the profoundest meaning of meditation. And that is the complete cessation of all discursive activity by the mind. Now this is the summit of meditation. And it implies that one has gone past, one has gone right beyond all the limitations imposed upon our awareness of existence by our speech faculty and sense functions. See, whilst the senses are functioning, sense impressions are reaching the brain all the time. Our speech faculty takes hold of those sense impressions and makes a picture, a structure, a mental structure. What in Hindu-Buddhist terms we call the sankharas, the conformations, the confections. See? Now these confections or conformations, these sankhara, the discursive thought patterns, are all limited. They are particular, and inevitably and invariably they are related to oneself. They are your particular confections. They may be similar to, they may be sometimes identical with the confections of many other people. But they are just particular to you in some respect or other. And they bear the stamp of all your own conditioning, illusions, delusions, your moments of clarity, what you have realized, and everything comes into that, the sankhara. And they are continuously changing because we change as we receive further and further sense impressions. And then we say a little later, oh no, that's not quite right, I think it is like this really. And a year later, 10 years later, maybe, oh no, it's something quite different, I don't think like that anymore. So these confections change. Now all this is within the domain of the activity, the integrating activity of the speech faculty upon the sense impressions. Now, when the senses quieten down, they go to rest, but you are fully awake. Your attentiveness does not flag at all. It becomes more and more intense. And with the going down of the sensory impressions, the pacification of the sensory activities, and therefore also the ending of the activity of the speech faculty to make all these imaginative patterns, the sankhara, then mind in its fullness comes into operation, free of all forms. There is no form, there is no shape, there is no beginning, there is no ending. That state of attentiveness is the actual experiencing here now of immortality, of complete communion within the totality. Transcendence itself, God Himself, the totality comes to full self-recognition through you. And this is what happens to the yogi, to the mystic, to the religious, the contemplative, in the supreme state of meditation. It is the complete transcending of the entire realm of mortality comprised within the discursive thinking process. In this state, the communion is complete and perfect. If you are of the theistic type, then it is no longer a case of thou and I, but it is entirely thou. Because the word I, to have meaning in the context of thou and I, must only refer to one's own separate I. There is no I. It is completely taken up into the totality of the thou. And in this state, the mystic talks of the love of God. Not his love for God, but the love of God, which is the unthinkable, indescribable reality. And that reality in the experiencing has no relationship to what we call love here. Because all that we call love, which we see and experience as love, has form, has shape, has limitation, has conditions. It is of time, it is of the realm of mortality. This is of the realm of the immortal. And this is the supreme meaning of meditation. Now, relate these two important aspects. The first one, mindfulness, and this one, the Supreme Communion. In the Supreme Communion, the mindfulness has come to such utter fruition that it is identical with the state of communion. This state of communion can only of necessity last for a certain amount of time. With the Holy Ones, it could last 7 days at a stretch. The body is completely still. All the sense functions are completely still. There is no disturbance even on the surface of the illimitable ocean of mind. I want you to try and just feel this sensitively. No disturbance even on the surface of this illimitable ocean of mind. And you are in that ocean, no longer conscious as I am I. There is no self-consciousness at all. It's completely disappeared. Gate, gate, parasangate, as it is put in the Heart Sutra. Now, after 7 days, this which has happened in terms of mind and consciousness, mind and awareness might be a better word in this context, of necessity comes to an end, because that manifestation, that functioning takes place through a living organism, the body. It can stay like that for 7 days without moving, eating, drinking, excreting, sleeping, etc. Utterly still. Not lost, but completely found by the divine reality itself. To use the testament in the phrase in the New Testament, the manhood is completely taken up into the Godhead. In St. John's Gospel, for instance, when Jesus says, "And now, O Father, glorify thou me with the glory I had with thee before the world was," not the planet, not the sun and the moon and stars, but this world, the living organism. Do you get it? So, Because the living organism is there, and through this living organism, this divinely beneficent miracle, miraculous event has occurred. The time must come when the needs of the organism have to be fulfilled, or else the organism will die. So, one comes back to the ordinary state of awareness. Bit by bit, slowly, the body awakes. And therefore, the senses function again, your speech faculty functions again. And the experiencing of that supreme unity of the universe is over for the time being. He who is the perfected Holy One, the trained disciple, if you like, the one who has learned at last, who has become enlightened, can enter the state again and again, whenever he wishes, granting, of course, that there are no disturbing circumstances. There has to be a certain degree of congeniality as far as the external circumstance is concerned. Well, you know, you've read the books, you all know that they retire into forest or cave or whatever it is, and sit in meditation, as we call it, and so forth. So now you see, the purpose of any meditation practice as such, and the meditation practice which we go through in the ordinary way, at its finest, is only this middle state, the discursive, the deliberate, purposive, discursive thought process. We must remember that, must bear that in mind carefully. This middle process disappears for the Holy One. Because once the complete realization is there, the mindfulness persists for the full 24 hours of the day. There is no necessity for a discursive thought process, for the production of the imaginative forms that the mind throws up. Only the truth, the fact, the reality is there. If you are truly mindful, you see the whole fact as the fact afterwards. You don't need to imagine anymore. That is why the Holy Ones didn't write symphonies or paint pictures or do anything like that. They were in communion. They were perpetually mindful. That means that right down at the level of the senses now, and the physical, the matter-of-fact physical level itself, they were in perpetual communion. Communion through the senses. That's why I constantly use this phrase. The senses really are the cords of communion. So you see how the whole man has become one. This fathom-long body. Now you see why this fathom-long body has been called the temple. Know ye not that ye are the temple of the Most High? The temple of the Holy Spirit. In the Skanda and the Maitreya Upanishads, I've quoted this so often to you, the body is the temple. The dweller in the body is Shiva, Sada Shiva. Shiva means auspicious one, the benign one. Sada means always, everlastingly. The dweller in the temple is the benign one, the auspicious one, the everlastingly benign and auspicious one. Now, perhaps we get a feel of what the religious life culminates in. What is the meaning of the coming to fruition of the religious life? It is this state. Man come to fulfillment. Man made in the image of God comes to life, moves, talks, sees, and is with us as the living God. This is why the holy ones willingly, consciously or unconsciously, through devotion or through mere conventional upbringing, have been worshipped as God. Because there have been those through the millennia who have realized that state. And their influence on their environment and the few who came in touch with them was such that it washed their eyes clean of the dust that covered them. It made the blind see. Think of the miracles of Jesus. It made the lame walk. You find this statement, the blind sees, the crippled walks, way back in the Atharva Veda, in relation, in one of the hymns to the god Soma. And the Atharva Veda precedes the birth of Christ by at least 1,000 years. So you see how long this has been known. This is the meaning of meditation, this is the meaning of prayer. And our image-making faculty, the sankhara-making faculty which we have at present, is at last done away with. Because it is the illusion maker, the illusion weaver, the weaver of these wonderful webs, iridescent, sparkling, attractive, but entrapping. Webs of thought, of fancy, of all sorts of speculative religious philosophies. The manufacturer of heavens and hells and whatnot. And all that is humbug. As the Tibetans put it, all the gods and the demons and everything, the whole world that we experience, out of the mind it arises, back into the mind it sinks. And when the sinking takes place, not because you or I, the person, has lost the power to remain attentive and awake, but because you and I have truly seen and realized such perfect mindfulness that we are always truly seeing, then that phantasmagoria of the forms, the deceptive forms spun out by the ill image-making faculty which we have are all gone, and you are free. This is your spiritual freedom. They say freedom is the crown of the spirit. Just as intelligence is the crown of the mind, and happiness is the crown of the organism. Now it is towards this end that there is meditation. In all its aspects. Now you see why I speak so strongly about silence and also stillness. Try and be free in your minds of the dictionary meanings of the terms silence and stillness. Because the dictionary meanings belong to the realm of duality. Silence is the opposite of noise, of sound. Stillness is the opposite of movement. This silence and stillness contains the noise and the movement. If we start with the silence, the meaning of silence that we ordinarily know, we can outgrow the ordinary meaning. That is to say, we grow out of it. We don't discard it. But in the process of growth, there is no discarding. There is no breaking down. There is transformation. This very state of movement and of noise gets transformed into the completely inclusive reality, which is silence and stillness. The ocean depth, or the solitary infinitude in which the entire cosmos is contained, as only a tiny, tiny fraction of this great infinity. Then you will know the full meaning of the void. In the state of supreme communion, that void, that emptiness, which is the still, poised and ever vibrant plenitude, out of that comes everything that we know. And here the religious fulfillment of man has come. That silence, that stillness.